Well, hey, everybody, and welcome. I'm talking to some almost early birds here. I am excited about our collaboration, and welcome to the four-part seminar series on applying the mind and brain sciences to strategic coaching. For this series, I also want to add, and this has been since you, since the outline was done that you have, I want to add and integrate some aspects at times of the performance sciences to that too. So first, I appreciate your already engaged involvement for the many of you who have sent responses to the two questions I sent around. I appreciate that, and those responses really help shape some of my discussion, and I welcome each of you who've not yet responded to send in your answers to those two questions. It makes a difference to me, and it's also why I do a live seminar series rather than a fixed format, so that we can discuss and I can be more responsive and hopefully more useful to you. We'll have for this series a discussion at the beginning and the end of each of the four seminars, and you guys are doing great already, but I'm going to ask you to manage the background noise, mute star six until you're ready to talk, and then another mute star six to unmute. So now I see from the registration there are some old buddies attending as well as some new colleagues. I'll do my best to change up the stories so that you won't get bored, for those of you who have done a number of things with me, or at least change the punchline. Now, if there are questions that come to mind after each seminar, or things we don't get to, or for those of you who are listening who weren't able to attend live, I had a number of indications of that, send me any responses or discussion or question by email, and I'll do my best to respond and incorporate the answers in the next seminar. So just for the framework, at the link you received, there's the outline and work pages. I'd suggest printing the outline. I'm going to go mostly from that outline as I talk with you. And also notice there are four ports for the recordings of the playback that will be posted most likely by tomorrow, the day after. So anyone who hasn't responded to the questions, wants to respond now, or wants to add or ask anything at the beginning before we go into lecture mode and do the material. What you got? Let me hear from you. Anyone? Any questions, thoughts, hopes, or answers to the question that you haven't sent in? If we were to focus right now on what would be the most important thing to you that you'd like to get from this series, what would it be?
Hey, David. This is Nicole Matthijs.
Thank you. I was getting lonely there. Go ahead.
Is anybody out there?
Go ahead. There are a bunch of people lurking, I see on my dashboard, but you're the brave soul, so that's great. Go ahead, Freddie.
I didn't get an opportunity to send you my answers, but I guess the answer to the number one question is I just hope to get more information than what I already have on how I can help my clients, shift their thoughts and enhance their lives better, take control of all of that negativity that they may be, maybe swirling in their heads.
Okay.
And so I guess that's just my biggest, I just want really tangible things to help them conquer that kind of stuff. So
okay.
That's what I'm looking for.
Thank you. And one suggestion I'd have is that you begin by actively jotting down, and the outline may be a useful place to do that. Sometimes if somebody doesn't have an outline, I'd recommend jotting down in a journal, but putting in an output channel what you're learning, what you're thinking about, at least in a brief form, because what we know from neuroscience is that when we complete a circuitry in the brain, by putting it in an output channel instead of just passive input and learning, it makes it more real, tangible, and more accessible. The simplest study for this so far is University of Waterloo did a study in which they had two matched groups read the same passage from a book, and one read it out loud, one read it silently. They gave a test. The ones who read it out loud did 40% better on the follow-up test. They put it in an output channel. And that's what we think about doing with our clients at the end of a session. What do you feel you are taking away from this session, and what do you commit to do before you come back? We want it in an output channel because that way it's more remembered. It makes it more real and more accessible. So great point, and thanks for that. Any other comments or questions? Okay,
this is Magdalena.
Yes, please, go ahead.
My name's Magdalena Raj, and I'm going to send my answers, and I hadn't, but I'm always interested in the science, so in this case the neuroscience, around the topic. We can read a lot about change. We all experience it individually and probably all have varying degrees of success with it at given times. And a lot of times I think we can look at it anecdotally as to why it's hard or it isn't hard, or try different techniques. But it's nice to know the science that's behind it so that you can marry the two together.
You came to the right place. I totally agree with you. And also, so many of the methods to facilitate change are contrary to the way the mind and the brain work. So when we understand how the mind and the brain work and synthesize and integrate that into strategic coaching, I think it can be exceptionally powerful for our clients in doing that and help us and them create a real mastery about the change process. And it's part of the sort of a broader framework of what we'll be talking about is if you want to really create change or change a habit or create a new one, don't focus just on the goal, focus on the system. Because it's the system that provides the structure of how to proceed. It's kind of like having a map. When you have a map, you know where you are, you know where you're going, you can measure progress along the way, and you can tell what's detour and distraction. So the real beauty of a map is all the stuff you then don't have to pay attention to. So it's analogous to focus. You focus on one thing, all the other millions of bits of stimuli are not important because it's going to align the energy field of your brain to focus on one thing. That's why questions are so powerful. It aligns the energy field of our clients to focus together and it engages them instead of giving them information. You know, many of you have heard me say, if information were enough, we'd all have a lot of money saved up for the future, eat mostly vegetables, work out every day, and be thin. And a lot of librarians would be billionaires. And we'd be out of business because everybody would engage Google instead of us. So information is not enough, and we're about to talk more about what all we do other than give information or instruct or guide someone according to our story, because this is about developing the client story from their point of reference and using what we can to inform that process. So I'll put us on lecture mode, and I'll reserve some time at the end, jot down any questions or thoughts you have, and we'll definitely come back to them. Okay, our first seminar, we're going to talk about an overview of a scientific system of mind, brain, and behavior. And strategic coaching, the hardest thing we do is help someone make significant changes in their life or their business stories. Because once someone has a pattern, whether that's an attachment, a behavior, an emotional pattern, or simply a fact or a belief, those are all anatomical realities in someone's brain, and you can't present a new idea and expect it's going to suddenly overwrite what's already there. It's a process, and we can help in the dynamic aspect of changing that, but it's a collaboration, and we of all professionals specialize in doing just that. The choice architecture of this moment for each client. So in our first seminar, we're going to review and integrate some important disciplines to develop this systematic way of looking at mind, brain, and behavior change. The next three seminars will apply those principles to facilitate changes that last. So generally in the last few years, we've seen revolutionary changes in our knowledge of the mind and brain sciences, neuroscience, psychology, quantum physics, behavioral economics, things that we can apply to strategic mentor coaching, and I would add especially in the performance sciences, something I've been very immersed in more recently. These innovative new frontiers can be synthesized and integrated to help us become significantly more effective in our daily interactions, as well as our own lives, our own self-regulation. The operating systems of our minds and brains are not fixed, but can be changed and transformed. We can rewrite mind software and rewire brain hardware to create, and with our clients, co-create new behaviors and new stories. We can engage in collaborative, co-created experiences to enhance our clients' success. So, by integrating the mind and brain sciences into the art of mentor coaching, we co-construct a new story with a client. That means we shift from, and look in your outline, the important things, I'm talking from the outline and looking at it, so I know it's there. I'm going to just elaborate some of the things that I've crafted to put in that outline. We shift from problem to possibility, again, unique to coaching, from teaching to experiencing, from telling to listening, from observer to participant, from educating to collaborating. These foundation components make coaching unique from all other professions. So let's look at operating systems in a broad overview. Behavioral patterns and belief systems downloaded, especially from parents, teachers, society, in the first years of life become automatic and operate usually without observation or awareness. Neuroscientists estimate that about 90 to 95% of our behaviors and core beliefs are pre-programmed in the unconscious mind and operate on autopilot. We only observe the derivatives of these patterns, these algorithms, as the behavior patterns and beliefs that manifest. But we never have to explore or go after the origins or understand the beginnings, because for every client, every algorithm that's there in their 90 to 95% unconscious operating system, everyone that's important will manifest in the relationship with you, not so much in the content, because remember, this is unconscious stuff. It will manifest in the process of how they recreate how and who they are with you. We're gonna come back to that. So that means that we create two stories simultaneously. The surface story, that's the conscious part. We run our lives with conscious intentions and aspirations. This is what we want from life. These are my goals. The shadow story that can often ghostwrite behavior because it comes from that other 90 to 95% may counter or go in the opposite direction as the surface story. If the shadow story says, well, I can't really get what I want, or my system keeps me from doing what I need, or I don't have what it takes. So here's a simple example. The surface story is, I want to generate more income and create wealth. The shadow story could be, I don't really think I have what it takes, or what if I put all of my energy and time into this and then fail? I'd be really embarrassed and feel really defeated. Or, well, some people were just born to have money. So, here's one more. I want to be healthy and thin. Now, the shadow story says, well, I want the cheesecake with the strawberry topping. You know, as you see, I specialize in dual surface stories. One of the first steps in mentor coaching with the brain and mind is to know ourselves quite well, to know our own story, and to have our own voice in its construction, and not, of course, superimpose it on the client. We can know ourselves by developing the capacity to be self-observers. From Benjamin Franklin in Poor Richard's Almanac, there are three things extremely hard: steel, a diamond, and to know oneself. Mentor coaching requires us to be insightful, reflective, and self-observant, to have mindfulness of ourselves in order to be empathically attuned to the mind and experience of a client. So let's consider an overview of the contributions from different fields and bring them together to apply in an informed strategic perspective for facilitating change. First, some contributions from psychology and psychoanalysis. Empathy, the listening position from inside the client's experience, the subjective reality of how the client feels, thinks, processes, and attributes meaning, and to engage clients to be empathic with themselves. Theory of mind, the ability to see the world from another person's vantage point, is essential for constructing a mental model of someone's thoughts and intentions in order to understand their behavior and emotions. Neutrality, remaining equidistant from both sides of a client's dilemma, or their ambivalence, or their surface and shadow stories. In other words, not taking sides, but allowing the client to resolve the dichotomy. Not picking one for the client, that would be functioning for the client, but to help them be aware of their creation of dual stories that may be in conflict. Learn from the old story. The past teaches the present, so not to repeat compromised parts of the old story. When an emotion becomes a foreground issue, especially if it derails progress or causes a change of state of mind, it must be dealt with first. Regulating states of mind and managing emotion is a crucial success strategy. Another huge success strategy, understanding our own dynamics and the dynamics of others. The intersubjective third, Two people in a relationship create a third entity, the relationship, the co-created third. The relationship has the power to change, to transform, and it takes on a unique life of its own. Everything in coaching occurs through the relationship. No matter what a client comes in with and consciously focuses on, the most important issues will be manifest in the process of the relationship. Positive psychology and emotional intelligence moved us to see health as much more than the absence of disease and to form a foundation of our focus on possibility rather than problem. It changes the mindset when you focus on problem versus possibility. It boots up an entirely different mindset. We'll come back to that. Cognitive behavior therapy, currently the most widely used talking cure approach in America, holds it's not necessary or even important for someone to return to the origins of a problem in order to overcome it. Rather, it's more productive to focus on the present and moving forward. Focus on the exception rather than the problem. Rather than giving energy to the problem and to understanding the problem itself, focus energy on the exception, because that's usually the solution. The result? Changes occur more rapidly. A specific application from psychoanalysis to mentor coaching and change. Transference is the repetitive ways of organizing current experiences based on past experiences. It's the organizing process of how we perceive, process, and attach meaning to our experiences. Transference simply means we use software developed in the past to read and respond to a current situation. Usually this works quite well because we repeat something and the things that work are hardwired and become automatic. We don't have to think about it. But if that software has become outdated and we repeat it, it's important to recognize that and look at it and facilitate change. And this is usually where we as mentor coaches come in. This process utilized by the mind and brain is helpful because it allows us to use vast experiences to respond quickly to situations. And it's limiting only in times when that old story or that old software has become outdated. Here's what all this means. A client is always teaching us exactly what it's like to be him or her, creating an in vivo demonstration of what needs to be known so that we can teach it back to the client out loud. For example, if you're working with a CEO who's annoyed and alienated everyone in the executive suite, a recent experience to me to say, well, let's send her to Kruger for one shot before. She is going to annoy you. She began to annoy me. That's her job description, to show me her issues. Her neural wiring and attachment patterns get activated in the relationship with me. So my task then is to develop the kind of collaboration and working alliance where we can both look at this, understand it, and help her revise to more productive and optimum performance. So we have to be open to that mutual reciprocal learning and not impart our theories. Each person has experiences and systems of meanings, place you need to begin in order to change their meaning, their system, to collaboratively write an authentic new story. So, some contributions from neuroscience. As recently as 1996, neuroscientists at the University of Parma in Italy noticed that when a monkey performed a particular action, there were specific neurons in that monkey's brain that fired. And they noticed that a monkey observing that monkey had exactly the same firing pattern. When the initial monkey had pain, the exact experience was there in the macaque that was an observer. This revolutionary finding provided a brain basis not only for empathy, but social connection. Mirror neurons are not specific cells, but a function of actual networks in different parts of the brain that reflect behavior and feeling of others. Mirror neurons help us directly and indirectly imitate actions, create experiences, resonate with someone's experience. Stick out your tongue at a newborn baby, and the baby will immediately return the gesture. The baby smiles, and the parent smiles back. It goes both ways. Mirror neurons are instrumental in acquiring empathy, language, and social behavior. This mirroring activity explains how children download beliefs and behaviors beginning in the first years of life without it being conscious or without their deciding to in any way or being aware even of the process. Later, for example, we experience and take in how our parents handled money, the behaviors, messages, attitudes, biases, meanings, and regard of money. Also, as a sidebar here, our clients are always taking notes, mostly unconsciously, from us while we're talking about other things. For example, how comfortable and confident to be as a professional, to charge what we're worth, to engage fully and empathically. Mirror neurons help us, and this works just as well, and there is contention about maybe better, but let's say just as well by telephone as it does by video or in person. Mirror neurons help us understand emotional and social contagion. If you see a person being poked with a needle, your pain neurons fire as you were being poked. We unconsciously imitate what we witness, ranging from movement to behavior patterns to yawning. I mean, this is why nobody wants to sit next to me on a couch while I'm watching an action movie. I twitch when the hero throws a punch or dodges a bullet. Mirror neurons enable us to empathically understand, to appreciate another's point of view, and see ourselves as others see us, a kind of self-awareness. So let's talk a little bit about the brain's error detection mechanism. Our brains detect changes in the environment and send strong signals to alert us to anything unusual. These error detection signals, and this is a specific part of the brain too, are generated in the orbital cortex right above the eyeballs, closely connected to the amygdala that registers emotion. Most of what we do every day is habitual, from how we get out of bed, shower, drive, the pre-COVID drive to work, how we dress, deal with challenges. The brain hardwires these behaviors to conserve energy. So to change any of these habits takes more energy. It takes first the form of attention, of awareness. We conserve energy by not investing attention to a change. Even our physiology resists change. If you fold your arms the other way that's natural, this is kind of an alert to say, you know, get it the right way. Things in the environment that are unexpected or different, anything other than what's normally expected, get immediate attention. This is part of the error detection of the mechanism of the brain. It's why the media focuses on bad news. It gets our attention. When we're problem-focused, it energizes us because we go down known pathways. It masquerades as effectiveness. It's why road accidents make people stop and stare. Unexpected danger demands attention. It's why people can easily name the things they do wrong and maybe struggle to list their strengths. We notice difference more easily than confirmation. Our mind maps include our beliefs, filters, values, patterns, even our hypotheses about how best to function in the world. These maps become our operating manual for mental processes, even though we may not be conscious of most of them. Yet, they're learned implicitly and practiced so often that their connections are hardwired into the brain. And here's a real practical application. A gap in performance has more to do with mindset, state of mind, than with intelligence or motivation. In mentor coaching, this means that even when somebody wants to change and is willing to change, the brain is triggered to be on guard when changes are introduced, and especially when they're enacted. This is why we usually avoid giving advice in coaching, because the advice is unfamiliar. The resulting uncertainty sets off the error detection mechanism. Even if the idea is familiar, the client could take the advice as a challenge to their status. So we have to take into consideration why a client may reject an idea before appraising it. During coaching conversations, we highlight or challenge a client's hypothesis at times. We distinguish concrete facts from their interpretations. These conversations can bring a client's map into conscious awareness as a beginning step to consider what they're doing as an active choice. Reappraising or reframing may be a part of upgrading that map to current circumstances or new and unprecedented circumstances. The burst of pleasure comes with the new connections of an insight or an aha experience. When you look at someone's brain on an fMRI, an aha or an insight experience lights up three different parts of the brain, and they're vaulted into a more synthetic and integrative and creative state of mind. If you give them information, facts, no change in the brain. This is why we want to facilitate the client developing their story, developing their own insights, and furthering that internal point of reference. So, some things that neuroscience teaches us about mentor coaching and facilitating change. These are important to keep in mind in practical work with clients. One, people have prior knowledge that affects how they hear and respond to new information. Existing knowledge is the beginning of new knowledge. It's where learning starts. It can't happen any other way. Here's an example, a few of you have heard this, of failed empathy, of not heeding this and keeping it in mind. Many years ago, I offered what I thought was a really poignant interpretation to an analytic patient back in the days when I was doing psychoanalysis. My patient paused and said, "No, Kruger, first you've got to be with me before I can go someplace new with you." The most succinct, cogent supervision I've ever had. Two, the prior knowledge is physical, real, and persistent as a neuronal pathway in the brain. As I mentioned, beliefs, facts, the things that we know, those are anatomical realities in our brain. They can't just be overwritten by another fact. They can atrophy with disuse as other networks take their place. And that's the inside job of coaching. But a teacher can't present a simple explanation and remove an existing neural network from a student's brain. Three, if we ignore reality, it will get in the way of new information and change. As we mentor coach to co-create change, we have to start where the client is, not where we are. We can't provide the tools for solving problems before we both know what the problems are and how the client sees it. This is why fixing doesn't work. You can't just list the four reasons the idea is wrong and expect it's going to rearrange anyone's neural network. Four, partly because it's complex and partly because it's subjective reality, kind of redundant there, people are not always aware of what they know. Prior knowledge is concrete. It's an actual pathway in the brain. So we began with discovering what someone believes, how and who they see themselves to be. Then develop collaboratively new ways to look at things and ultimately new stories. Specific examples sometimes help people become more ready for concepts and abstractions and broad principles, because we're talking about something really specific and tangible. Some contributions from quantum physics. Quantum physics helps us understand energy fields. and adds how the activity of an observer affects what we observe. How two people in a relationship and a dialogue create a third co-created experience. Quantum mechanics offers the notion of systems theory. To understand a change in any one aspect of the system, whether that's the internal system of the client or the client in their system of other people, changes everything in the system. What quantum physics teaches us about mentoring and change? What we know is the power is in the focus. Thoughts have a frequency, an energy field. Focus selects that frequency. And focus does exactly what a map does. It allows us to focus our energy and all the things we then don't pay attention to. And another perspective of that, Dr. Joseph Murray said it very simply. Your subconscious mind does not argue with you. It accepts what your conscious mind decrees. If you say, I can't afford it, your subconscious mind works to make it true. So this way of looking at things, and this is where the law of attraction is based in quantum mechanics. If you lay a nail and a paperclip side by side, nothing happens. If you take a magnet and stroke the nail several times from head to point, it becomes a magnet and can pick up the paperclip because the molecules of the nail become aligned in the same direction. This is what focus does with our brain. Same with your energy field. When all of you is going in the same direction and focused, you have immense power. So each moment, how do you align and focus your personal energy field? Now, the paradox is that we don't attract what we want. We attract what we focus on. This is what the brain and the subconscious, the unconscious part of the brain, knows. We bring about what we focus on. Everybody wants more money, so wanting is not the key to having it. Focusing on scarcity attracts scarcity. Focusing on prosperity aligns your energy to pursue prosperity. Now, quantum physics offers us one more paradigm. In addition to our individual energy field, there's a collective field. And you can tap into and resonate with this field, the quantum field of possibility. Einstein called this the unified field theory. Basically, he said that we are each a bundle of energy and interact with another person as another bundle of energy. And this combination creates another kind of entity, but also we react and respond to a larger energy field. I think a natural experiment for this is the NBA. 84 games, 42 away, 42 at home. Every team loses more games away than they do at home, and every team, no matter how bad they win more games at home than they do away. Think of the effect in good days of 70 to 75,000 people, most of whom have a positive or a negative energy field, and the impact of that. This is also the basis of social intelligence. Now, some contributions from social psychology. Here's an example of that serves just to illustrate a whole number of other processes. We are each embedded in vast social networks of friends, families, coworkers. Dr. Nicholas Christakis, a professor of medicine at Harvard, followed 12,067 people for 32 years. He found that clusters of friends show a contamination in the induction and the spread, basically, of things like obesity, unhappiness, drinking, smoking, exercise, healthy diets. He shows how your location in the network impacts your life in ways you don't even know. An example, if your immediate circle of friends is obese, your risk of obesity is 45%. If your good friend becomes obese, it increases your chance of becoming obese by 57% in the same time period. If your good friend's friends are obese, your risk is 25% higher even if you've never seen them or don't know anything about them. Now, and this was all controlled for the selection and a whole number of things, but also there's application in a whole number of positive ways, the induction of healthy diets, of exercise, a whole number of applications that have been really remarkable. So what kind of things can cause this contagion? Well, one is mirror neurons, emotional attitudes, dispositions, states of mind that are contagious without people even being aware of it. It occurs from brain to brain, from amygdala to amygdala, and mirror neuron functioning is involved. For example, neuroeconomists studied pairs of people using fMRI scans of their brains when they were interacting with each other. When they were in tune with each other, really in sync, the brain state and emotion of one was mirrored by the other, and their brain waves, their rhythms were in sync. As soon as one lost that empathic connection or stopped paying attention to it, it immediately stopped those synchronous brain patterns. So this, I think, is some of what we want to think about as we resonate with our clients, because we come to know so much more when we're solidly grounded, when we're attuned to our clients, and we get information not just from what the client tells us and what we collaboratively co-create in the new story we develop, but this also introduces the possibility of our intuition, of our being able to perceive things beyond what the client even knows consciously, logically, intellectually. Contributions from Buddhism. Buddhism teaches us that when one area of the brain is engaged, the other components will not be engaged. When we want to relax and stop thinking, we engage the right hemisphere when we stop talking and thinking. Further engagement of the right hemisphere occurs by focusing on feeling and experiencing the body as a unified whole. How does this apply then to the process of mentalization? Mentalization really entails awareness of mental states in ourselves as well as others. It involves awareness of these mental states as representation of reality from a number of different perspectives. The process focuses on function rather than content. This non-judgmental attitude by us as mentor coaches, being curious, open-minded, inquisitive, engages a collaborative exploration. And that's the one thing that I would say that most fundamentally underlies the kind of distinction of our work as professionals from all other professionals, is that we engage in a collaborative framework. We co-create with the client everything that unfolds. Now, stress, overwhelm, excess emotion can hijack mentalizing and impair this process of self-awareness and self-regulation. When someone's actively engaging in action behavior or action symptoms, such as eating, spending, or drinking, they are not mentalizing. One aim of the mentor-coaching relationship is to enhance this mentalization process, this self-reflection. The engagement with clients to enhance their awareness of mental states in themselves as well as others informs an understanding of their own dynamics as well as the human dynamics of others. Even the most entrenched thought and behavior patterns can be changed by reprogramming the mind and rewiring the brain. This process of change requires mentalization, thinking about what you're thinking, reflecting on your experience, and awareness of where you focus attention. Now, a growing body of neuroscience research confirms the power of examining the sequence of one's thoughts and internal dialogue, of becoming the impartial spectator of your own mind and conversation. For example, examine the internal conversation that immediately precedes a decision. For example, to not follow through on a commitment. If you have a plan and don't follow through, is your process that you bargain with yourself and say, I'll start next Tuesday? Do you defy your own authority and say, heck with it, I'm just going to have a good time? Or do other ways stop yourself that make it make sense? Or do you just simply get distracted? Looking at this internal process and collaboratively coaching client can be immensely useful. So pay attention to new ways of thinking and behaving. It's always going to be uncomfortable at first, because anything new or different is by definition uncomfortable, because it departs the default pattern, the comfort zone. Focus attention on what's positive, what you want rather than what's negative or what you attempt to avoid. An example here, our brains can't tell the difference between anxiety and excitement. So if you interpret, or a client interprets something as being anxious, then it makes sense to avoid. If you frame it instead to look at the challenge, at the opportunity, it's an entirely different framework to engage from that point on. So that's where we may want to interrupt to say, what's the challenge here? What opportunity do you see? So mindfulness is a mental mode of engagement in the present moment without evaluating or emotionally reacting to the situation. Mindfulness training strengthens the brain's ability to pay attention. The opposite of a wandering mind is a mindful one. Learning mindfulness, the awareness and focus on the present moment, is an antidote to worry, rumination, fear. Mindfulness, to focus on the present moment without judgment, has proven benefits for both health and happiness. One simple method to engage the process of mindfulness is meditation. A simple 2-minute meditation focused on breathing. Most of you are very aware of that. Meditation does 3 major things. Increases the number of neurons in the brain regions that mediate attention, compassion, and empathy. It strengthens the immune system, and it improves psychological functioning of insight, creativity, and productivity. That's a lot. The benefits of mentalization development. There's evidence now that shows that those with stronger empathic abilities can better predict the emotions and motives and actions of others, as well as simply understanding and connecting to others in a different way. Another example to consider. People who can visualize their future selves, to imagine themselves at 70, 80, 90, save 2 to 3 times as much money as those who don't or can't visualize themselves in an older age. This has been used now, especially beginning at Stanford, with computer-enhanced images of people to look at what it would look like if they kept going with gaining a pound a year, what that looks like on a computer image in 30 years, what it looks like if they keep smoking versus what it looks like if they don't smoke, if they exercise or if they don't. So these are all things just to think about. So this is a summary of science contributions. Psychoanalysis addresses coming to the end of an old story but not how to strategically create a new one. Quantum physics recognizes the participation of the observer in the creation of reality, but omits motivation. Neuroscience illuminates workings of the unconscious and conscious mind, but disregard the spirit. Psychology helps us understand the developmental role of effectiveness and mastery, yet remains silent on brain contributions. What we can do is bring awareness from all of these disciplines together to apply and inform our strategic coaching. So let's talk for just a moment then about the application in collaborative contingent conversation. The basic principle is asking the right question has way more power than giving people the right answer. And we know from appreciative inquiry that it can yield much better results than seeking and solving problems. Looking at possibility boots up a different mindset than looking at problems. So the mentoring process, the mentor coaching process is one of collaborative contingent conversations. Collaborative in that both parties make contributions. Contingent in there's no agenda or script. There's a map that both coach and client adhere to, but what each person says is in response to what the other just said and vice versa. So if you have a list of questions to rely on or use as prompt, throw it away and just talk to somebody. So remember, the conversation is not just the verbal interaction, but every channel of communication, overt and subliminal. We are wired to connect, to bond with others. When we strongly connect with another, the neurochemical oxytocin is released, which is the chemical of connection and bonding. That's the chemical that it's at its highest at the time of childbirth to induce both delivery and this quintessential bonding experience. The experience of connecting intensely with another human being is the antithesis of the stress response. So in overview now, we learn through stories. Stories are how we understand, how we remember. It's a way to hold information to make sense of things. Defense lawyers know this. So did little kids standing next to broken vases. Stories create both personal mastery as well as connection with others. Marketers have figured this out, which is why we see so many stories in various ads. We're hardwired to convert our lives into stories. Our brain is a pattern-seeking and a story-making organ. Our narratives, the stories we tell about ourselves, both describe and determine what we do. We become the stories we tell about ourselves. Now, our clients don't think of it in this way. I'm talking to you as mentor coaches to listen to the story of your client. But the client does not experience what they're going through as a story because it's just the way things are, not a story. A story is our metaphor to help us understand and to help us be able to find ways to intervene, to change, modify, or to create a new story. Why can't we tickle ourselves? Because the brain contains specialized circuits that distinguish between self-generated and external stimuli. This allows us to distinguish between self and others. So a successful resolution to a past story that may not be working quite as well is to transform it by learning from it. We become wiser for it, more adaptive. We shift from repeating the old story and its programming, perhaps to recognize, own, and assess that story to decide what to change. This is where we come in. When patterns are broken, new worlds emerge. This is what we specialize in as mentor coaches, breaking the script. We extract the lesson from the past experience to write a new narrative in a current context. The new story overwrites the old story, and the old story just kind of disappears, kind of like a memory, like our laugh when we get up to walk. rather than an active intrusion in the present. This places the memory on a library shelf in our mind as a choice to revisit at will. We remember in order to forget. The story we use to guide our lives makes it easy to navigate, since our brains have created neurons and pathways for those habits to make them the default connections and to conserve energy. This is everything that we do, from thoughts, feelings, behaviors, to various patterns of attachment with others, behavioral patterns. And there's a lattice work of these little models. Our story is orient, guide, and instruct. The narrative we construct guides our lives. So this is why it's so important to understand stories and understand how the mind and brain works, because we collaboratively want to work with somebody whose brain is geared toward repeating patterns and opposing anything that changes. Anything that changes that creates discomfort, and it alerts the error detection mechanism to say this is not right. By recognizing, observing, and owning a story, whether that's a part of a life story, a money story, a wellness, career, a relationship, you can assess that component, that storyline, and decide what's changed and map changes. This is exactly what we do. This is what we specialize in. You can then author new beliefs and then program the changes to transform an identity according to the new story. We're going to come back to that, because identity is so important. It's the most powerful force in the human psyche. We always return to our identity. So that means if we help a client just create a behavioral change without helping that client transform the operating model of how and who they are, their identity, they'll simply revert back to their basic identity. So, next week we'll discuss states of mind and neuroconditioning. I'm going to go off of lecture mode, ask you to manage the background noise, and take comments or questions or reflections. What do you
think? Good evening. This is Danny Bedoni.
Danny, hey, welcome. How are you?
Oh, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. You holding down New York?
Oh, yes.
All right.
First of all, thank you. But short and sweet. I'm learning that from Dr. Kruger. Identity.
I'll keep talking to you if you call me Dave.
Dave. Dave, the part of the identity, it's such a – somebody has to be muted, I think.
If everyone would mute star 6 until you're ready to talk, it would be very helpful for us.
Yeah, it's not me.
I know. Go ahead.
Okay. The part of the identity, that's one of the things I've been experiencing time and time again with my clients as they go back. But one of the things that I think we do in coaching is go to the present and forward. We do not go back, and that's why we're not therapists and we're not working on that. But how do we start knowing the part of the identity? I know the client tells us his own story.
I'm
going to
ask you if you would shape that into a succinct question, just because of time, because I'm really address it as much as possible.
This always happens to me. Yeah. Okay, identity. How can we see clearly the identity of our client, because it all goes back to that source,
Without
talking about the past?
Okay, yeah, we focus on the choice architecture of the present moment. Let me use as an example how you said something. This happens to me. That's what I would address if I were coaching you at this moment, to say you're speaking as if that's something that you do automatically, or as if that's an entity and you're the subject of it. Now, you instead are the author of it. It doesn't happen. You don't create it until you create it. So you move to an active position rather than seeing it as if it were some entity happening from a passive position. That's a first measure of recognizing, owning, and assessing in order to then map and bring about the changes. then to incorporate this process, including the change process of creating a new component, a new thought, feeling, or action, as a present model of how and who you are right now. It's not about repetition of the past. It's not about passively experiencing anything. It's creating in this moment all of what you think and feel and experience, and then that becomes aligned with how and who you are. This is what you do. This is who you are. Does that in a too brief way make sense to you, Danny?
Exactly. Thank you very much.
Okay, super. Thanks. Good question. And much, much more richly deserving of time and work than that. But we'll let that be for right now. Other thoughts, questions, or comments from anyone? Anything that you'd like to clarify from what you heard?
Hi, I have a question. This is Shauna Warner.
Okay, welcome, Shauna.
Hi. I primarily work with teenage girls, and so I encounter a lot of resistance in the moment. And I'm wondering if you can talk to or address maybe a tool or a strategy to just help ease or calm resistance in the moment. And I have a mental health background, so I understand a lot of the psychology behind it, but coaching is far more intuitive to me, so that's what I do now. I'm just wondering if you could give me something to just soften the resistance.
Okay,
so we can...
I want you to answer me in 5 words or less. You agree to do
okay.
You agree to do that?
Yeah.
What do you give them that they resist, or just simply, what do they resist? 5 words or less.
They resist. Okay, let me try this again.
5 words or less. Put your fingers up, and when you run out of digits, on one hand.
Right.
Okay.
They resist trying something new.
Okay. Okay. Here's what, and this is the professional coaches in the athletic arena that I work with, they know what to do. They've been players or work players all their life. They know exactly what to tell somebody to do, but it doesn't work that way. So the hardest thing for them to do is what I'm going to suggest that you're doing. Don't give them anything to resist. They're teenagers. Their job description is to resist everything that comes their way. This is part of how and who they are and how they define themselves to say, this is where you end and I began. So professional athletes and teenage girls share that in common. So this is to everyone. So consider, instead of telling someone information, because here's what happens, and I'm going to go a minute over with your permission if you guys are okay with that. Look at my last blog, you know, How Do You Help Somebody Change Their Mind on Mentor Path. If you give somebody information, the first thing that someone does is to see if it aligns with what they already believe or what they already know about that. If it aligns, they're going to seek ways to confirm that and agree, confirmation bias. If it doesn't agree, they're going to seek ways to refute that, to oppose that. So either way, and the people who are the more intelligent and the more intellectually flexible will find even more firm ways to entrench themselves in their already existing beliefs. It's called the boomerang effect. It has just exactly the opposite. So what's the antithesis of this? It's exactly what we do in coaching. Instead of telling them something, give them facts or information, ask a question. A question engages someone to answer. When they begin to answer, you have the beginning of a collaboration. There's no way you can oppose a question. It asks someone what they think about someone or something, what their thought, what their opinion is. There's nothing to oppose about it. You engage someone. So if you're looking and you don't know anything about them, what's your greatest challenge?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about this? So begin with a question, and this will be the best beginning for professional athletes and teenage girls. Oh, and by the way,
can I ask you a part two?
Of your clients, if you'll do it in one sentence so I can respond in one sentence because we're already over.
Yep. The answer is I don't know.
You don't know what?
That's what I get from the client is when I say, what is your biggest challenge? What's coming up that's stopping you? And I get, I don't know.
Well, I wouldn't know how to answer that either. Those are both abstract. What's stopping you? Nothing stops. If you stop yourself, you stop. And there's nothing that says there's some force or some mechanism that's stopping you that you're the subject of. I give them much more power than that. How do you decide to stop yourself? But I wouldn't ask that. I would simply keep it open as a question. If somebody says, I don't know, well, that's the beginning. What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good start.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about that? You convert a period into a comma. Hey, thank you all very much. Send me any questions, thoughts, or comments at all by email. We'll pick up right here next time. Thanks for all of your input before the seminar and at the beginning and end of it. I appreciate it very much. A great group. I look forward to picking up right here next time. Take good care of yourselves. See you guys.
Thank you.
Bye, Dave.
Bye now.
Hey. Thank you.
See ya.